The following is a recording for Credicorp on Friday, May 4th, 2018 at 9:30 a.m. Central Time.
Excuse me, everyone. We now have our speakers in conference. Please be aware that each of your lines is in a listen-only mode.
At the conclusion of today's presentation, we will open the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given as to the procedure to follow if you would like to ask a question. With us today is Walter Bailey, Chief Executive Officer, Alvaro Correa, Deputy Chief Executive Officer, Gianfranco Ferrari, Deputy Chief Executive Officer, Reynaldo Llosa, Chief Risk Officer. And now it is my pleasure to turn the conference over to Credicorp's Chief Financial Officer, Cesar Rios. Mr. Rios, you may begin.
Good morning and welcome to Credicorp's conference call on our earnings results for the first quarter of 2018. Before we review Credicorp's performance, I would like to take a few minutes to give you some background about the political environment in Peru. On March 21st, former President Pedro Pablo Kuczynski presented his resignation. On March 23rd, Martín Vizcarra took office as president until July 28, 2021, in a democratic process. We believe that the change in government does not imply a change in the economic model. Mr. Vizcarra has publicly stated that his government, in economic terms, will be focused mainly on, first, increasing tax revenues without changing income and value-added taxes, but reviewing tax exemptions and increasing excise tax for specific products such as alcohol and tobacco. Second, reducing current expenditure. Third, adjustment in El Niño Reconstruction Initiative to speed up project execution. Moreover, the government has announced that it will soon publish Law 2400, which dictates that civil reparations that companies involved in the Lavallato case must be paid, and for promoting private investment but reducing red tape. On May 2nd, the Congress granted a vote of confidence to the cabinet. Next page, please. Slide number 2. Here, I would like to discuss the international environment and the evolution of the local economy in this context. In chart number 1, the figures show a positive international environment. IMF forecast suggested that the global economy may expand at the highest rate in 7 years. In chart number 2, you can see that commodity prices have performed well, in particular copper and zinc, which accounts for 36% of our exports. In chart number 3, you can see that Peru's GDP growth as well as domestic demand have been improving slightly. However, growth is still below our initial estimates for 2018. In chart number 4, you can see that our trade balance also shows some improvement. Finally, the quota for the fish anchovy fishing season of this year is the highest seen in the last 7 years. In this scenario, the fishing sector, which affects primary manufacturing and services, will account for 0.4 percent points of the 3.5 percent real growth expected in GDP this year. Fish meal exports are expected to grow for $1.5 billion to around $2 billion this year. Next page, please. Let me comment on the evolution of the key interest rate that affect our businesses. First, in the two charts at the top, we see the evolution of the 3-month LIBOR rate and the yield curve for the Peruvian sovereign bonds. These rates are important for our short and long-term funding, respectively. At the bottom of the page, in chart number 3, you can see that the central bank cut its reference rate 100 basis points during 2017 and another 50 basis points in the first quarter of 2018. Finally, the orange line in the chart number 4 shows that loans expanded 7.6% year over year in the Peruvian financial system, while quarter end loan balances for Credicorp grew 8.8% year over year. Next slide, please. Regarding to our lines of businesses, I would like to mention some important aspects. In the case of universal banking, first, it has been faced pressure on margins due to aggressive competition, in particular our corporate banking segment. Second, The decision to improve the risk quality of our retail banking loan book has translated into risk-adjusted pricing that put downward pressure on margins but allow us to improve risk-adjusted NIM. Third, we adopted the new requirements of IFRS 9, which, among other things, set new guidance for measurement of allowances for loan losses. From January 1, 2018 onwards, we use a forward-looking expected loss model instead of the incurred loss models required under IAS 39, which represents an increase 320.7 million soles in the allowance for loan losses. All the aforementioned resulted in an increase of 94.6 million soles in deferred income tax and a reduction of 226.1 million soles in retained earnings. Fourth, we sold about 177 million of non-performing loans under judiciary process that were provisioned and had real estate collateral. With regard to microfinance, Mibanco posted year-over-year improvement in several performance metrics such as loan growth, efficiency ratio, and cost of risk. An important driver of such performance is the improvement in productivity of loan officers, which is in turn associated with the strategic project Cliente Soy that is focused on client segmentation and branch efficiency. In the case of insurance and pension funds, life insurance keeps posting good levels of profitability, in particular, after the pension fund reform hit our annuities business, it is recovering due to the product Rentaflex that allows clients to personalize monthly coverage, maturity, initial date of disbursement, and other key features of the product. Medical services continues improving its profitability. Property and casualty faces challenges mostly, in its car insurance business, which operates in a market that is contracting. In terms of our pension fund management business, our subsidiary, Prima FP, registers a level of new affiliates that is above our expectations due to the tender for new affiliates that we won in December 2016, which implied a reduction of fees. This showed their full effect throughout 2018. Furthermore, due to changes in the accounting rule IFRS 9, there is an impact related to the recognition to the P&L of the profitability generated with the reserve requirement. Before that, the profitability was booked against equity. Next slide, please. Sorry. In investment banking, it's not a turn of page. In investment banking, we still face challenges in corporate finance and capital markets due to market conditions, particularly in Chile and Colombia. Private banking offshore was negatively affected by the amnesty for repatriation of capital. However, BCP captured around 80% of the total capital that was repatriated at the country level. Now, another page, please. Slide number 5. Let's review the most important figures and indicators that show Credicorp performance in the first quarter. Credicorp reported net income of 1,038 million soles, which represented a 2.4% reduction quarter over quarter, but a 16.7% increase year over year. All this imply a return on average equity and average assets of 19.3% and 2.4% respectively. Loan growth of 2.8% quarter over quarter and 7% year over year in average daily balances, which represents a recovery in loan growth considering the evolution posted throughout 2017. Loan expansion quarter over quarter and year over year was due to better dynamics in retail banking and Mibanco, an increase in wholesale banking market share, although at low rates. Second, net provisions for loan losses decreased 15.9% quarter over quarter and 30.8% year over year, mainly as a result of the improvement in risk quality achieved in SMEs, Mibanco, and consumer financing business segments in the last 3 years. The aforementioned has been captured in the methodology of forward-looking expected loss required by IFRS 9, as we will briefly explain later. Furthermore, the first quarter of 2017 posted a high level of provisions for loan losses due to the effect of El Niño phenomenon and Lava Jato cases. As a result, the cost of risk decreased 28 basis points quarter over quarter and 84 basis points year over year. Third, Net interest income decreased quarter over quarter due to a contraction in interest income on loans, which was partially offset by the reduction in interest expenses. Over a year basis, net income increased slightly due to loan growth of 7% in average daily balances. In this context, net interest margin contracted 11 basis points quarter over quarter and 28 basis points year over year. This was mainly due to the significant reduction in wholesale banking spreads and our decision to improve risk quality of retail banking that we mentioned earlier. All of the aforementioned, together with a reduction in cost of risk, translated in an increase of 8 basis points quarter over quarter and 23 basis points year over year in the risk-adjusted net interest margin. Fourth, the efficiency ratio decreased 250 basis points quarter over quarter due to seasonality in operating expenses every four quarters, but increased 100 basis points year over year due to low growth in income generation. Finally, in terms of capital ratios at BCP standalone, BIS and Tier 1 ratios increased quarter over quarter after the annual general meeting of shareholders approved the capitalization of earnings as well as the increase in legal reserves in March 2018. On the other hand, the Common Equity Tier 1 ratio, considered the most rigorous capital ratio, dropped to 11.22% due to the effect of the declaration of dividends in the last quarter. Slide 6, please. As you can see in the chart at the top left-hand side, average daily loan balances expanded 3% quarter over quarter. This expansion was mainly driven by growth in wholesale banking loan book, both in corporate banking and middle market banking, which are segments with low margins and accounted for 68% of growth in loan volumes. It is noteworthy the year-over-year expansion of 7% in average daily balances. Nevertheless, market conditions represent a significant challenge, in particular for wholesale banking. Next page, please. At the end of first quarter 2018, Credicorp's funding structure continued to reflect higher growth in deposits as a funding source, which had a positive impact in funding costs given that the expansion in deposits was mainly attributable to non-interest-bearing demand deposits and saving deposits. Additionally, this funding source has replaced central bank instruments, which continue to decline in this quarter as they mature. In this context, Credicorp's funding costs contracted 9 basis points quarter over quarter and 7 basis points year over year. This reduction was primarily attributable to BCP standalone, whose funding costs in local currency fell and offset the increase in funding costs in foreign currency. Finally, Credicorp's loan-to-deposit ratio decreased quarter over quarter and year over year to situate at 102.4% given the deposits expanded at a faster pace than total loans. Slide 8, please. In terms of portfolio risk quality, as you can see in the chart at the top of this page, coverage ratios of internal overdue and non-performing loans have increased quarter over quarter and year over year. The improvement in coverage ratio was mainly due to, first, the one effect related to the adoption of IFRS 9 requirements since January 1, 2018, which we explained earlier. Second, the provision for loan losses net of recoveries made in the first quarter of 2018. Third, the sale of 177 million of non-performing loans. Moreover, as you can see in the chart at the bottom of this page, Credicorp's cost of risk situated at 1.48%. This level represents a contraction of 28 basis points quarter over quarter and 84 basis points year over year, which was due to the contraction quarter over quarter and year over year in provisions for loan losses. This was in turn achieved due to, first, the enhancement of our risk adjustment pricing methodologies and risk rating model, as well as some specific changes to credit policies in micro segments of our retail portfolio have led to significant improvements in risk quality of new vintages. All aforementioned has gradually shown at portfolio level. In some cases, these measures imply that we reduce interest rates in order to improve risk and level of collateral. Second, the improvement of risk quality in Mibanco loan book based on our improved risk-adjusted pricing, which we deploy with precise client segmentation. all aforementioned, together with the slight and gradual recovery observed in macroeconomic scenario, was also captured by the IFRS methodology. Next page, please. With regard to net interest income, quarter-over-quarter analysis showed that it contracted 0.8% due to the reduction of 1.3% in interest income, which was in turn driven mainly by a decrease in interest income on loans and dividends on investments. The aforementioned was attenuated by a contraction of 2.6% in interest expenses, which reflects the reduction of funding costs as we explained earlier. Although average daily loans balances expanded quarter over quarter, interest income on loans contracted because loan growth was mainly driven by wholesale banking, whose margin has been under pressure due to aggressive competition in corporate banking. In the year-over-year analysis, net interest income grew 1.8% due to an increase of 2.3% in interest income on loans, which offset the expansion of 2.7% interest expenses. All of the aforementioned translated in a drop of 11 basis points quarter-over-quarter and 28 basis points year-over-year in net interest margin. However, the decrease in cost of risk allowed posting an improvement in risk-adjusted net interest margin on a quarter-over-quarter and year-over-year basis. Next page, please. Slide 10. Credicorp's efficiency ratio decreased 250 basis points quarter over quarter, mainly due to the seasonality on operating expenses every fourth quarter. This level usually represents the lowest level of each year on a quarterly basis. On year-over-year basis, the efficiency ratio increased 100 basis points and situated at 42.8%. This was due to lower growth in operating income than in operating expenses. The drop in operating income growth was due mainly to low expansion in net interest income, while the increase in operating expenses was the result of increasing salaries and employee benefits. It is important to note that year-over-year reduction in Mibanco's cost-to-income ratio was attributable to the improvement in productivity of loan officers, which is in turn associated with the strategic project Cliente Soy that we explained earlier. I think that we can go to the guidance. As you can see, for the full year 2018, we presented the guidance in the previous conference call, and now we are maintaining our guidance that continues facing challenges due to the competition and low economic growth, which we have compensated with improvement in efficiency and risk management. With these comments, I would like to open the Q&A, please.
Thank you. At this time, we will open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key on your touchtone phone now. Questions will be taken in the order in which they are received. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, press star 2. Again, to ask a question, please press star 1 now. Our first question comes from Ernesto Gabilondo with Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Hi, good morning, and thanks for taking my call. Three questions from my side. The first one is in terms of your loan growth. Just want to understand if the acceleration we saw in wholesale during the quarter was explained by offering lower rates to be more competitive in the market. And I appreciate how you see competition. My second question is related to NIM. If loan growth continues to be driven by low margin segments, what should we expect for the NIM in the next quarters? And the last question is about this implementation of IFRS 9. What should we expect in terms of provision charges in the P&L? I think the cost of risk was 1.5% in the quarter with the new accounting changes. So I just want to know if this ratio is sustainable going forward. Thank you.
Okay, this is Gianfranco Ferrari. In terms of your first question, loan growth, as you mentioned, we grew importantly last quarter in basically focused in corporate banking. We comfortable today. We don't foresee being as aggressive in terms of pricing in that segment, and we are basically focusing in being much more intelligent in terms of pricing across all segments, not only in corporate and middle market, but also in retail. So we might expect slower growth over the next quarters, but sustaining NIM. And that gets me to your second question, which is we're really focusing on NIM after provisioning rather than NIM by itself. As you can see, even though it was in page in slide 9, as you can see, even though NIM has been going down over, if you compare quarter over quarter and year over year, risk-adjusted NIM has been increasing, and that's in the end that's what matters really. So we expect risk-adjusted NIM to either improve slightly and or to be stable in the near future. I will ask Cesar to answer the last question.
Regarding to provisions, actually I will link my answer to Gianfranco's. We are very focused on our risk adjustment and pricing methodologies, and in this methodology we case by case, segment by segment, try to maximize bottom line profitability, making conscious changes between return on, based on margins, risk, and volume, with the objective to maximize bottom line. In some cases, we are going to reduce consciously the risk level. For example, last year we focused mainly on consumer loans because the risk was above our expectations. But in other segments, we can increase volume because we think we can make a profitable offset. As a result, we expect a better risk-adjusted NIM.
Just a follow-up in the last question. So is it reasonable that the cost of risk should be maintained in 1.5% in the next quarters?
This is Reynaldo Llosa. I would say we should expect stable cost of risk for the following months, since the portfolio is performing quite well in the last few months, and we see that continuing in the next quarters and the rest of the year. And having said that, there are also some things we're doing, trying to get into new segments that might offset the positive results, marginally offset the positive results we are getting today. So in general, I would expect the cost of risk to be stable in the rest of the year.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Carlos Macedo with Goldman Sachs.
Thank you. Good morning, gentlemen. A couple of questions. Actually, just one question has a couple of parts on your guidance. I just mentioned that you expect the cost of risk to remain stable. Obviously, the margins started out the year slower than your guidance would suggest, so, but the risk-adjusted margins are higher. Your loan growth is already at the top of your guidance, and you talked about accelerating growth in the consumer book and hopefully gaining some acceleration there. ROE for the quarter was above 19%. Your guidance is 17.5% to 18.5%. Is it time? Would you already revise guidance this early in the year? I mean, it looks from the quarter that you're going to beat it quite handily, or maybe that the next three quarters won't be as good as the first quarter was. How should we think about that?
Yes. I would say that we are at the peak of the ROE. We maintain our guidance, and the first quarter, due to seasonality effects, we usually have lower expenses, and in particular in relation to the transformation efforts, we are starting to accelerate, and we don't capture these costs at the beginning of the year. In terms of risk, Reynaldo mentioned, we are talking about a narrow range at the end, between 150 basis points and 160 basis points. I will say this is a narrow range in relation to the bottom line.
Okay, but would you say that there is more, that you would be closer to the upper end of the range of your ROE given where you started? Or would the bottom end of the range still be very much in play given where you started?
Well, that's what guidances are for. we provide a range. As a matter of fact, we're in the upper part of the range, but it's too early in the year to tell.
Yes.
There's seasonality in terms of expenses, and also seasonality in terms of the effort we're doing in the transformation process within BCP. So we keep our guidance in terms of ROE for the year.
Okay. Thank you so much. And Walter, hope you're feeling better. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jason Moyin with Scotiabank.
So that is one of the questions I had was that the change in methodology for provisions resulting in this 1.5% cost of risk, and the fact that you made some provisions or some allowances for loan losses against book value, if they were to remain stable at 1.5%, that would be lower than the guidance that you're providing of 1.6 to 1.7. I understand the expense side, given the implementation of your digitalization strategy. So maybe if you can comment for me on the outlook for provisions, if it seems like the guidance there, from the statements we just heard, 1.5, if it were stable, would be below the cost of risk in the guidance under new IFRS 9 methodology. And in the case of, maybe you can give us an update on the implementation of the digitalization strategy and investments you're doing on that front. Thank you.
I would like to emphasize that the improvement is not only due to the changing methodology. I will say this is a second effect. The most important underlying effect is the change in policies, the new methodology in pricing and risk measurement that has been improving the quality of our new vintages. And as these new vintages are starting to weigh more heavily in the portfolio, we start to see better results. The changing methodology was significant at allowance level, in which we charged $220 million January 1st. But the methodology is only capturing the underlying improvement of the risk profile of our portfolio.
All right. Maybe a follow-up there. What would the cost of risk have been if you hadn't changed the methodology?
I mean, we don't have that number, but if you compare our results to the local accounting practices, you would see that they are very much aligned, and you see an improvement there on how the portfolio is performing as well. So in general, I would say that we have seen a very good quarter, this first quarter, in terms of the results of the new vintages, as I was mentioning.
Okay. And maybe an update on the implementation of the digitalization strategy and investments that you're making.
Yes. A general comment, sorry, or do you have a specific question?
No.
A general comment? Oh, okay. So, well, as you know, we started maybe
right.
3 years ago.
You mentioned the expenses yet in the first quarter, so we should start to see them, and maybe if some color on just general comments on what's going on there and how that's evolving, that would be great. Thank you.
Yes. I would say that and we have had some conversations regarding this issue in the past. What we foresee is that in the near future, we might have a blip in terms of in terms of cost to efficiency ratio, but in the long run, that cost to efficiency ratio should be reduced. As a matter of fact, our guidance is to keep the efficiency ratio stable over the year, and we are pretty sure that that's achievable this year. We might expect that in 2000 onwards to start getting the benefits of the transformation. That's our view today.
That's great. And maybe just an update. Walter, is Walter back resuming fully his responsibilities?
He's alive. Okay.
Yes, I'm here. Thank you very much. I was just going to do my usual closing comments. Thank you very much for asking. Yes, I'm back, but trying to take it slowly, recovering and getting into the old pace. But yes, I'm back. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Carlos Rivera with Citi.
Hi. Good morning, everyone, and thanks for the opportunity to ask questions.
My first question is related to the sale of the non-performing loan portfolio. I wanted to understand a little bit better that transaction. So first, just to confirm if due to this sale, if you released any provisions or if in any way the cost of risk at 1.48 was benefited from this, and if you booked any gains when you sold the portfolio, was this provision probably 100% and then you were able to gain a little bit from this? And my second question, probably also related to if there were any gains on the sale of this portfolio, is if there were any other elements that might be non-recurring or difficult to repeat. You mentioned the sale of a proprietary investment, mainly sovereign bonds from Peru. Any gains that you could disclose there, that would be very helpful. Thank you very much.
Yes. When we sold the portfolio, it was for 177 million face value. We actually book a gain, but it's not registered in the cost of risk. It's registered in other income line due to the accounting nature, because it was a previous year and a previous year account. It's recorded as an extraordinary income, but the effect is reflected in the non-performing loans level. You capture this effect in the NPL level, and it's around 15 basis points.
Okay, and can you disclose the amount of this gain that was reflected in other income?
It's around 29 million soles.
Okay, and what about the second question, the sale of proprietary portfolio there?
Yes, as a part of the strategy last year in which we saw a low growing loan portfolio, we increased our investment portfolio, and now we are starting to sell this portfolio and realize gains.
But that's part of the
current business.
Non-extraordinary transaction whatsoever.
Based on the situation, we can do the same
anytime.
Okay, understood. Thanks a lot for the clarification.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Marcelo Tellez with Credit Suisse.
Hello, gentlemen. Most of my questions have been answered, but if you could elaborate a little bit how you see the competitive environment. It seems that in some segments, you are still growing below your competitors. So if you can describe a little bit how things are in that way, that'd be great. Thank you.
Actually, we don't. There might be some slower growth in our portfolio, specifically in the consumer finance business. I'm talking this quarter, the last quarter. But besides that, we've gained either maintained or gained market share this quarter. So even though we see that there's harsh competition across all segments, we're gaining market share. We're not gaining market share in consumer finance, but are either keeping or gaining market share in the rest of the businesses.
Only to complement, we don't have figures of March, but as of February, we have a total market share in BCP standalone of 29.2%. In first quarter 2017, we had 29.1%. That's mm-hmm. the same.
Mm-hmm.
But can you comment on the consumer segment specifically? I mean, what is what the competition has been like? I mean, if you have been like raising the bar a little bit more versus your competitors, so if you can elaborate on that, that'd be great.
Sure. The reasoning behind is what I mentioned before. We're rather looking for NIM after provisions rather than NIM by itself. Therefore, maybe 2 years ago, since our vintages weren't in where we wanted them to be in terms of risk appetite, we started to be much we raised the bar as you mentioned. Nowadays the vintages are much better. We feel much more comfortable, and as a matter of fact, we are re-entering with better risk models segments that we pulled out a few months ago. So that's the main reason why we slightly lost market share in the consumer finance business.
Thank you. And just one final question. I mean, when you look in terms of your sustainable ROE, right, expectation of around 19%, how do you think that number, you know, could be, you know, maybe too conservative, you know, in light of, you know, everything you guys have been doing, you know, on the risk side, on the efficiency side, you know, because when you look in the first quarter, I think one of the questions kind of addressed that as well, and we know there's the seasonality of costs and so on, but, you know, you are slightly above 19%, right? And given that, you know, you have opportunities for, you know, to continue to grow your loan portfolio, have more operating leverage, wouldn't be reasonable further with the digitalization of the bank, wouldn't it be reasonable to expect, you know, a higher ROE in the long term than this 19%?
The issue, we keep our guidance, and the issue is that there's a counterforce, and I agree with you that we might be more efficient and so on, but there's a counterforce that due to competition, there might be a reduction in, a further reduction in NIMs. So in the long run, we expect a stable ROE around 19%.
Okay, that's very clear. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Domingos Falavina with JP Morgan.
Thank you for taking the question too. Congrats on the quarter. My question, I think it's been widely explained, the outlook for provisions and the effect of IFRS 9, I guess, in the future. But I guess I have a little bit of a theoretical question as what exactly happened. Because my understanding is that IFRS 9 basically forces you to provision on your securities portfolio, your debentures, and that you changed into a expected loss model. So the point I'm having a difficulty here is that you make a statement saying that it helped your provisions because your improvement in models, basically you have a lower expected loss in the future, and that drove some benefits in your lower provisions or in your credit costs. My question is, like, when I think about IFRS 9, is that you should keep the same old provisions on existed loss already on occurred losses and add for the future expected one. So you should add actually not only a one-off in your book value, but at least some pressure on your credit cost. So my question is really theoretical. What exactly of the IFRS 9 supported your lower provision expenses?
Probably I will split the answer in two parts. In terms of investments, the most significant impact of the change in methodology was the reclassification of portfolios from available for sales to trading for around 1.6 billion soles, and was already a charge of around 68 million soles in terms of allowances. In terms of current provisions, I will say that the impact in investment is at this point negligible. We have not seen any significant impact. In terms of loans, the fundamental change, as we already mentioned, is the change in the profile of the portfolio. What happened with the new methodology is due to the forward-looking and expected loss nature of the methodology, you capture the improvement probably a little bit quicker than the old methodology of incurred loss. But this is only a timely effect, but not significantly different in the medium term of the risk portfolio due to the methodology by itself.
No, it's super clear. Thank you very much for the explanations on the book value changes. But if you have already incurred losses, let's assume $1 billion in already provision for incurred losses, when you change methodology and you go into forecast losses, you don't remove the $1 billion you had on already occurred losses, but you do add something on future. So to me, it would actually occur a one-time off of adding provision expenses. So this is the part that I'm having some difficulty understanding. Or did you actually reverse provisions that you had on incurred losses?
No, I think probably I understand your question a little bit better. When the new methodology, you have three different stages. Probably the most significant difference is in the second stage. In the second stage, with the new methodology, you don't have only an expected loss for example, a very early delinquency, but an expected loss for the entire life of the loan. So if you cross certain thresholds, you, in the methodology, have a present value calculation of the whole life expected value of the loss in this specific loan. So you book one time, and in the case of our adjustment, you have realigned all the expected losses that were not captured and the old methodology. But once you are set up this new and higher bar, you only have the marginal effects as in the old methodology.
So you basically use whatever allowances you already have as a credit for this new methodology.
Yes, I think there are two differences. One is in the current methodology, and the changing allowance, you make a one-time realignment. In our case, in the loan portfolio, was 320 million additional allowance.
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah, it's clear now. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key on your touch phone now. At this time, there are no further questions in the queue. I would like to turn the conference over to Walter Bailey, CEO. Sir, go ahead.
Thank you. After a very disappointing growth for the country and for the financial system last year, it seems that this year both the country and the system, again, are poised for a more robust growth. This, of course, in the back of a very positive international environment and a more stable political environment domestically. This first quarter, all of our businesses have performed well, clearly with microfinance, particularly at Mibanco, having the most outstanding results. Bright spots on the corporation, again, microfinance, Mibanco, and at BCP, risk and volumes. The weak spots, of course, the pressure on margins due to the intense competition in the domestic market. But as Gianfranco mentioned, we're being very cautious and managing the risk, the NIM after risk. So we are focusing a lot in maintaining profitability of our businesses. The overall result for the quarter was a very healthy 19.3 return on equity, which was not impacted, as was mentioned, by any non-recurring results. We expect and hope that this sets the tone for the rest of the year, but particularly I think the topics that have been discussed are the ones that will be recurring throughout the year: risk, volume, and growth. Again, we are very satisfied with this first quarter, and hope that the remaining quarters of the year will prove to be equally as good. With this, we conclude the conference call, and thank you all very much for attending this call and for your questions. Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect.